Hey, I'm Michaela Lafrac, the host of Vermont Edition. The podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Happy listening. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Imagine being out today on this beautiful sunny day on a sailboat on, say, Lake Champlain. You're on the boat alone and the wind is whipping around you. You're going fast and the sun is on your face. For years, this activity might have only been available to you if you were wealthy enough to own a sailboat or physically able to operate a traditional boat on your own. That is all changing thanks to the work of folks like our two guests today. Today, we'll learn about how sailing as a sport is changing and expanding and becoming more accessible to people in our region. We are joined today by Owen Milne. He is the executive director of the Community Sailing Center in Burlington. It's a nonprofit that provides education and recreation on Lake Champlain for nearly 8,000 people a year. Owen, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined today in the studio by Patrick Standen. He's the president of the Northeast Disabled Athletic Association, which is based in Mallets Bay. They support people with disabilities to help them participate in recreation and competitive athletics. Patrick, welcome. Now, I would love to start with both of your sailing origin stories. Owen, when did you first learn to sail?
So I never sailed a day in my life until I started this job at the Sailing Center 7 years ago. So backing up a little bit more about that origin story is that as a kid, I had quite a few self-confidence issues, and a former hockey coach of mine turned owned the or was a manager of this place called Windridge Tennis Camp and said to my parents, hey, I think Owen would really benefit and it would help his confidence a lot if he were to come. He's a solid tennis player. So, you know, and my parents said, that's like the Trump send their kids there. We can't afford to like, and he said, don't worry. I fundraise for this and we'll scholarship and Owen can wash some dishes and come to camp. And so, that summer was an inflection point for me. And I went from being the kid who barely came out of his shell to be a completely different person. Yeah. So fast forward years later, and I'm a semi-responsible single dad shopping for summer camp in like June 1st. And the only thing that's left is like math camp and sailing camp. And I say to my daughter, how do you feel about sailing camp this year? And she said,
well, over math camp.
And she's like, well, I don't know that I really like. And I'm like, let me rephrase the question. You're going to sailing camp this year. And interestingly, I saw a lot of the same changes in her with her esteem and self-confidence in just the 2 weeks at Community Sailing Center sailing camp that I experienced as a young person.
What do you think brought out that self-confidence in both her and you? What is it about sailing?
Well, bear in mind, there wasn't any sailing at the camp that I had experienced as a young person.
Sure. Yes.
I think it was, for my daughter, as it relates to the sailing, was the you're driving a boat and you're 9 years old. How often in your life do you actually drive something at that age? Some of our youngest kids are, you know, at the tiller of a 23-foot long keelboat at age 7, 8, and 9.
Wow.
So it's a powerful experience for them to be in that level of control, which builds that confidence.
Mm. Well, Patrick, we'd love to hear from you too. What is your sailing origin story?
Well, I grew up and spent my summers on a lake in Vermont, Lake Rescue, and we had a series of boats that we'd mess around in, things like sunfish and snarks, and then jump ahead in college. My wife their family sails a lot, and I got back into sailing. After graduate school, I started a sailing instructor at the Community Sailing Center. And I've been competing in regattas around the world in sailing and owned a few sailboats over the years.
One of the things that I think we'll have to do today is break down some of the sailing terminology that those of us, myself included, who do not sail might not know. Let's start with regattas. What are those?
A regatta is just a race. It's a sailboat race. And, you know, there's the sailors think, you know, when they try to define regatta, it's two boats on the same tack. And tack is going in the same direction because you always want to go a little faster, a little more efficiently than the next sailboat.
And as many communities are in Vermont, sailing is a relatively small one. But you two have known each other for decades now. Is that right?
Indeed, yes. Owen was the tennis pro that worked with the Edge, and we started a wheelchair tennis program years and years ago with Dan Bonfiglia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I served on the board at the NDAA for a number of years as well.
Yeah, and I used to badger him about going sailing.
And you won.
And here I am.
Let's talk boats here for a second. Oh, Owen, some of our listeners might have seen the little white sailboats out on Lake Champlain that are coming from the Community Sailing Center. What are they called? How do they work?
So what you're probably seeing are, you know, 30 plus small little dinghies that our kids are out there sailing on. And they're anything from a small little blue floating bathtub that we call a Hartley that's indestructible that, you know, our 9-year-olds run into all sorts of things, including each other, to larger ones that we actually have adults out even today, as we speak right now, using adult dinghies that have spinnakers and can get going really fast. And they're a lot of fun.
How fast are we talking?
I mean, okay. That sailing is the most fun you can have under 10 miles an hour. So, we are not sailing Volvo Ocean race boats going 30 miles an hour. We're talking, 5 to 7 to 8, maybe.
Yeah, and that's a fast clip. Normally, you factor in knots, and you know it's a good sailboat's moving at 3 to 5 knots, and you know it's fast when you're on the water. It wouldn't be fast on anything. Although the fastest vehicle, land vehicle, I think is an ice boat.
Hmm. Yeah. Wow. Today I learned. Yeah. Well, Patrick, the type of boat that you use is called a Martin 16. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, the Martin 16 is a great boat. It's specifically designed for people with disabilities, and so it minimizes the need to move around in the boat. The sailor is sitting directly in the middle of the boat, midships, and facing forward. And all the lines to landlubbers, those are ropes, and the lines run into the cockpit where the tiller is located, and there's a seat behind that so that if the sailor wants to bring a companion or if there's a sailing instructor aboard, they can come with them. And it's a sloop, which means it has two sails. It's got a big sail, a main sail, and a smaller jib, which is the forward sail. And it's designed so that it is incredibly safe, and it really can't tip over. It has a drop-down bulb keel underneath it that weighs about 300 pounds, and which is almost half the weight of the boat. It was designed by a yacht builder in British Columbia by the name of Dan Martin, designed specifically with a couple of folks with disabilities, including Rick Hansen, the Canadian who went around the world in his wheelchair. And it took off from there. And one of the great adaptations of this particular boat is that we can fit it with a computer-assisted helm and joystick system. And the helm allows a person with really high disability, so they perhaps can't even really move their hands, to use the boat and sail it. It can also be interfaced with a sip and puff system. And a sip and puff is similar to what you might see someone using their power chair to use. And it's a wonderful thing because it means that there is absolutely no limit on the physical requirements for sailing. Anyone can sail.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
You mentioned that it's nearly impossible for one of these boats to tip over. Have either of you been in a sailboat that has tipped over?
Yes.
What was that like?
Fun.
You're braver than I.
Yeah. Well, dinghies and things like that, they tip easily. In fact, the sailing center and any sailing instructor, that's the first thing you teach sailors is how to tip your boat over to get it back up and how it's not the end of the world. Of course, sailing is a high-risk activity. And when you're dealing with bigger boats, you don't want to tip those over. They're a lot more weight, a lot of lines, a lot of moving parts, so it can be a lot more dangerous. But you always wear a PFD. But the smaller boats, the dinghies that Owen was mentioning, I mean, that's part of the fun, particularly on a hot summer day.
Yeah.
For people just beginning to sail, it is always challenging because sailboats are designed to heel, which means the boat tips a little. But they're incredibly stable. And what feels like the boat's tipping a little is actually where the boat wants to be. It's a physical dynamic between the wind and the water. So the bigger boats, the Martin 16, sonars, yachts, what you would normally conceive of as a larger boat, would have to really be hit hard by wave and wind action or some other kind of catastrophe in order for it to go over, because keels on the bottom of the boats do function as a stabilizing unit. And that's what the bulb keel is on the Martin. And I said nearly impossible because we all remember the Titanic, right? Right. So, you know.
Isn't it bad luck to bring up the Titanic in a conversation about sailing?
Yeah, probably. We'll knock on wood and not bring bananas on boats. So.
Well, you mentioned that you know, everyone wears a personal flotation device, wears a life jacket. But I can imagine, Owen, that when you're introducing folks who are new to sailing to the sport, that people who haven't had access to the water before, to swim lessons, might feel nervous. That might be a barrier to overcome. How do your instructors help with that for folks who are coming to you and this might be their first experience, really? Out on the water.
Yeah. So we require everyone to wear a flotation device at all times. So instead of us doing a swim test, we actually require a water comfort test. So everyone goes in the water with their life jacket on to really understand how it works, what it does. So because we know that a lot of the people that are participating in our programs, you know, their families have not been able to afford swim lessons for them yet. And this is their first entree to that. So we know that if we required the scary 100-yard, you know, tread water for 30 minutes, come back sort of swim test, we'd weed out so many people who would never actually participate in this program. And we have had a tremendous safety record over 30 years with focusing on using life jackets and being really vigilant that nobody ever goes near or on the water without one on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and traditionally in sailing, and when we're talking about big ocean going vessels, you don't want your sailors to swim.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't want them to leave the boat, right? So and if the sailor needs to swim, it's too late for everything. But you know, in recreational sailing, it's very safe. And as Owen said, the instructors train to a degree of comfort and skill in the water. And try to develop a lot of scenarios in lessons so that the person's confidence is at the point where they feel good.
Well, if you're just joining us, we're discussing the sport of sailing and efforts in Vermont and our region to make it more accessible. We're speaking with Patrick Standen of the Northeast Disabled Athletic Association and Owen Milne of the Community Sailing Center. If you've worked with either of these organizations before or are a sailor yourself, give us a call, 800-639-2211. Let's go to Michael in Newport. Michael, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, hello, and hello, Owen. We met.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Good. Just happened to stumble on the show and decided to call in and let people know that we're also forming a little sailing center here, and you've been a great help in that process. So we're first year in the water up in Newport on Lake Benton Magog, and we're also working with Vermont Adaptive Partners, too, to make it more accessible as well for people with disabilities. So just wanted to call in and say hi about that, and great listening to you guys again.
Oh, thanks so much for calling, Michael. Could you tell us a little bit about the work that the Community Sailing Center is doing in different parts of the state, not just in Chittenden County, to
sure.
expand sailing?
So actually, I was introduced to Michael through another friend, Michael, and he said, we're starting a Community Sailing Center on Lake Memphremagog in Newport. Newport needs something like this. They've got this beautiful lake, and that community would really benefit from something else to do in Newport. We've been around at the Community Sailing Center on, you know, the waterfront of Lake Champlain in Burlington for 30 years. We've got 30 years of experience, and Michael and I are already brainstorming on, okay, insurance, boats, donors, how do we build this? And that's one of the best parts about having these sorts of relationships is it's easy for us to just have that knowledge transfer, go off to another lake, and another community gets out on a beautiful body of water in Vermont.
Mm. We heard from a listener ahead of today's show named Lisa, who writes, I have been involved with sailing since high school in Western New York, and I'm now nearing 60 in November. My older brother introduced me, and I was hooked. I had the honor and privilege of helping out with the sailing camp on Lake Bomazene through the Castleton Recreation Department. The instruction provided was phenomenal for a very economical price. I can only hope as the campers and parents reflect back full sail, knowing how truly amazing this opportunity was. They also say that their 17-year-old son has foundational sailing skills and a little sunfish to continue to learn about working the treasure of the wind. Now, Patrick, just before the break, we heard from a listener up in Newport who is working on getting sailing there on the lake. And you mentioned to us during the break that there's another organization over the border that you wanted to mention.
Right, yeah. Michael, if you're still there, you should reach out to the Association Quebecois Voyage Adapté out of Pointe Claire. And they have a huge disabled sailing fleet and lots of sailors. And I know they used to run a branch out of Magog. So they might have some great opportunities to share resources about sailing, particularly about the knowledge of disabled sailing and getting folks, because I know that region draws a lot from southern Quebec.
Mm. Well, Owen, your organization is committed to making sailing a more diverse sport. Do you have any statistics to share or general sense of who is sailing right now and how that's changed over the years?
There is a national statistic that was dug up for us when we did a segment with CBS News nationally. And that was that 0.1%, 1/10 of 1% of people that identify as Black, Indigenous, people of color sail.
1/10 of 1%.
So, and before we created a program focused on changing that, we were at 1%, which, you know, we're 10 times better than the national average, but, you know, honestly, it wasn't good enough for us. And So we started a program to address that issue back in 2019, actually more like, sorry, 2020. And as it stands today, this year will be about 24% participation among Black, Indigenous, people of color in our youth sailing program. And our adult sailing program, which just started 2 years ago, we're already going to be hitting 20% this year.
Mm. How'd you get to that point?
It took a lot of listening. Mm. We worked with this group in the city of Burlington, and I'd give a shout out to them. They're called the Trusted Community Voices at CETO. You've got people that are really well plugged into the Vietnamese community or the Congolese community, and they know the moms and they know the challenges. And so they, when we went out to them, they're like, yep, you got to translate all your materials into these seven languages. You got to think about transportation. You have to make sure that you don't use the word scholarship. Like, people get afraid of the word applications and scholarship. Just say it's free, no questions asked for people that identify as BIPOC. Another thing that was really important was to make a promise that it's free for life. Hmm. So, and this is part of the success there, is to say, if you create a scholarship program, I'm using air quotes, and you, if there's a chance that the scholarship might not be available to that family a year or two from now, that parent doesn't want to have to pull the rug out from underneath their kid's experience and say, you got 1 year of sailing and we can't afford doing it anymore. So that's what, and this is some of the feedback that we got from that group, is to think about the long-term nature of it. So we started, that's part of the success of that program. Since we started that program, we now have four of those kids and from the first cohort are junior instructors this year, and they'll be sailing instructors next year. And that's how the program works, is they come in and we promise to them that we would make it free, and then we end up with great employees afterwards.
That's great.
Yeah.
And Patrick, I would love to hear from you too about how your organization is spreading the word about how sailing can be for people of all different types of bodies and abilities.
Yeah, and similar to the Community Sailing Centers program that Owen just talked about, we realized that, you know, cost is prohibitive for a lot of people, certainly with the additional cost of living with a disability. So our program is free, and we encourage people to donate what they can. But, you know, we don't want that to be a burden. And so that is a big starting point that gets people out. And, you know, they still have skin in the game because they can participate and pay what they can afford. And then we have all the equipment. We have the life jackets. We have all of the sailing paraphernalia they're going to need when they get on the water. All they have to do is contact us, either call us or go to our website. And then we have U.S. sailing trained instructors who will work with them, teach them a little about sailing, and then get them out on the water as quickly as we can to enjoy the lake. And they're usually they're hooked at that point because they, you know, they leave their dependents on the dock. They enjoy the freedom of the water, and it's just wonderful. And you know, we reach out. The earlier caller who said years ago she sailed on Bombazine, we're finding that a lot of older sailors are attracted to the Martin 16 too. That maybe their hips and knees just can't sustain jumping around on a bigger boat, and sitting down in the Martin 16. Is a wonderful alternative to that. And so we do a lot of outreach to organizations, word of mouth, and that usually generates some interest. So the idea is that we're going to find a way to get you in the boat. Mm-hmm. And we have, you know, boating is really actually from the very beginning very accessible because there are a lot of ramps near water and lifts and hoists. And then we have a hoist that can lift people from their chair into the boat and back out again if needed. And so we try to think through everything that we can to minimize or remove any kind of barrier that either programmatic, economic, or physical that would prevent a person from getting on the water and enjoying it.
And Patrick, you did some work as well, helping to make beaches in Vermont more accessible to people in wheelchairs.
Yeah, my love is not just in sailing. It's really all things water. And years ago I worked with the city, Parks and Rec, to try to make some of the beaches. I realized that none of the beaches around Lake Champlain were in anywhere wheelchair friendly or accessible. And there's still quite a way to go. The city now has beach chairs that you can rent at North Beach. And so there are alternatives, and then even getting into the woods and lakes and streams, and working with the Vermont State Department of Natural Resources and Wildlife and Fish and Game to build and advise on fishing docks and piers and things of that sort. So you can really get out and enjoy all the waters of Vermont.
And visitors to North Beach in Burlington might see the ramps and mats that allow people to enjoy more of the beach than just the sidewalk or parking lot. Speaking of some of the equipment needed for sailing, we received an email from a listener named Dell who writes, "I grew up sailing and I love it, but have not managed to sail much for quite a few years. I have two sailboats, each of which needs some rehab care. I'm wondering how to connect them with someone who would like to get them back out on a lake." Oh, and do you have any advice for Dell?
The two happiest days of a boat owner's life is the day they buy a boat and the day they sell it.
Yeah.
Is this like the thing where someone's always giving away a piano on Front Porch Forum?
Oh, yeah. This is boats are
zucchinis.
We get, I would say at least every week we get somebody trying to donate a boat to us. And the unfortunate reality of boat ownership is the cost. And honestly, similar. I know we've talked quite a bit about disability as a barrier to participation. Boat ownership is actually the number one barrier to participating in sailing. It's the first thing that the Community Sailing Center did 30 years ago when we started, is to say, we're going to take boat ownership out of the equation for people. We got our own fleet, and then people who know can just come on down and sail. And so while I can't provide advice on how somebody might rehab an old boat that might have been sitting in a yard, what I can recommend is, like, say, get a membership or a pass at the sailing center, and then just come down and use the boats at a fraction of the cost of what it would take to actually own and rehab a boat. Because that's really the biggest challenge. Owning a boat is what has made sailing go on the decline for the past 20, 30 years in general.
Yeah, I'd advise Dell to reach out to some of the local yacht clubs that have sailors. And a lot of the sailors might be looking for boats that they can fix up. They all have bulletin boards. They all have online classifieds. So contact the various sailing organizations or private yacht clubs in his area, and I'm sure he can find someone. And, we all go past those desolate boat graveyards near water, and there's they do. And to give you a measure, the Martin 16 fully outrigged with the helm, computer helm and steering system, runs around $30,000. So we fundraise, buy it, because that is going to be a price point that people can't make. So, and boats are expensive, and everything about boats are expensive. I mean, if it's a larger sailboat and you need fuel, marine fuel is going to be more expensive because of the environmental taxes added onto it, which are necessary. So there are a lot of costs.
I have a bit of a lighthearted barrier to sailing that I want to ask you two about. That is seasickness, an affliction which I've had for my entire life. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing maybe some of our listeners do too. What are your tips for seasickness, perhaps, that you give to folks who are new to sailing? Oh, and we'll start with you.
Everybody's different. So what works for one person won't work for somebody else. you know, there are, you know, the simple things are meaning actually eating a little bit before, and going with an empty stomach actually can sometimes make it worse for some people. I've seen other people say that if they keep their eye on the horizon versus on the water, it helps dramatically. Some people that I've gone sailing with, I actually will give them control of the tiller, which has helped a lot for some, because then they're looking at the direction and they're feeling the boat pull in different directions. So, you know, you can Google sailing with seasickness and see all of the host of different options that are out there. But I would say that if none of the tricks work, then there are patches. There are patches you can have, and so Dramamine or other chemicals that you can get.
So, Michaela, have you sailed on a lake and pond? Do you get seasick?
I have not personally.
So typically, seasickness is going to occur in the ocean with swells, and because it's fooling around with your sense of balance, you know, because of the swells that the boats are going over, they're rhythmic and they just change the way you go through the world from a balance point of view. It doesn't happen much in lake sailing because you don't have swells. You might have something similar to swells in, you know, large body of water like Superior, but Lake Champlain isn't going to have that. So you're unlikely to get seasick, right? But if you do, of course, people do have balance issues and they may still, and, you know, looking at the rise in warm Coke, a lot of people drink it. It sells out on ocean liners when in rough seas.
Really?
Yeah.
They keep it warm.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard ginger ale, but not warm.
Yeah. So, but try going out on the lake and, you know, the short, sharp movements of a boat are probably not going to disorient you the way that ocean swells will.
Mm. Well, all right, this is heartening. I'll give it a try. Before we have to wrap up, I want to share one more email from a listener named Julie in Williston. They write, I'm a member of the Mallets Bay Boat Club, joined the sailing world late in my 40s, but was all in, and now I am racing and maintaining my own 28-foot boat, and I love it. I've been privileged to be a companion sailor at the NDAA Martin 16 Regatta. I love that people can, quote, leave disabilities on the dock and participate in a physical sport on the same level as everybody. Thanks for the show. Well, thank you, Julie, and everyone for listening. And thank you so much to our guests for joining us today. We had Owen Milne with us, the director of the Community Sailing Center in Burlington. Owen, thank you so much for your time.
Great. Thank you.
We're also joined by Patrick Standen, the president of the Northeast Disabled Athletic Association based in Mallets Bay. Patrick, it's been a pleasure.
You're welcome.